We take you now to the studios of NBC, where a college tour of American University students is underway.
Right here, class, is the radio section of the NBC building, if you care to take a look around. And we've seen television. This is the father of television, as it were, radio. Right over here is Studio One. Now, in this studio, they do such programs as the very popular Al Ross Morning Show.
Oh, yeah. Very morning.
Very fine rated program. Now, down here is Studio Two. Now, from this studio emanates the very popular Mac McGarry Evening Program. Right over there is Studio 3. Now, in this studio is done the very, well, the Joy Boys program. Over here is Studio 4. Miss Patty Cavan does her program every day.
Wonderful.
The Joy Boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro. We are the Joy Boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro.
Hi, folks. My name is Ed Walker.
Hey, and I'm Willard Scott, www.dub.
No, that's not our website.
It's
www.thejoyboys.
WWDC, you idiot. That's another station that fired us. We've been canceled by more stations than Penn Central.
It's an old line. In our former days, we were known as the Joy Boys, and we're going to start this CD.
He's a producer, wasn't he, in Hollywood?
CB DeMille, yeah.
Anytime, CB. You the cavalry. We're going to burn Atlanta again.
Now, you want to tell the folks where we got that theme?
There's a wonderful guy here at NBC, Smokey Stover, Donald Stover, who was an engineer. And he went to CREI, I think, Capital Radio Engineering and Electronic something
Institute.
Another. Institute. Rudy Toot Toot from the Institute. And they used to sing that at the engineering school as kind of a joke. Remember?
Yeah.
We're the Joy Boys of radio. Yeah. We chase electrons because they were engineers. They chase electrons. And so Smokey used to sing it, and he would do something wild with his lips and sounded a lot like gas.
It actually was gas.
It was gas from Smokey. It was Latter Day Rock. It was not rock. What's the word? Rap.
Rap.
You get a
yeah. Hey, you do a pretty good job on that. Anyway, we don't know who wrote those lyrics, but the melody is the old circus march, the Billboard march. And the two of us were singing that opening theme with the big band of Billy May's orchestra. And one of the engineers that used to work with us, Bobby Shenton, was the recording engineer. And when we imitate Bobby Shenton, we always make the sound of a tape rewinding. That's Bobby. That's Bobby Shenton.
Well, you know, come to think about it, if you hear the original Joy Boys theme the way we recorded it, Smokey Stover's on it. Because you hear him, you know, he does that gassy trombone. That
on the end, the end theme will be that. That's the original one that I did, four-part harmony. It's awful.
That was good. You
and then we had Patty Page always made more money than I did. And
Patty Page made more money than Patty Page that Patty Page made.
Well, she got paid four times.
I know it. That's what I mean. But the first Patty Page got more than the other three.
All right.
Who the hell cares? Does anybody really care?
Not really, no. Now, Bob wants to know the history of the Joy Boys. And this is true because Willard wrote about this in his book. Most of what Willard wrote about in his book wasn't true, but
yes. We
actually met.
I went downtown one day to the home where they had these street folks, and there was Eddie with his guitar and pencil.
And my monkey had just died.
That's right. And the monkey needed a heart transplant. So we called William Morris Agency, and, of course, they have no heart.
So sweetheart, have I got a deal for you?
Have I got a dead monkey for you? And there, in living color, was Ed Walker, and that's how we met.
That's how we met.
Now, that's the story we tell Hollywood.
Truthfully, we actually did meet at the radio station at WAMU. I was a freshman in college, just had ended my freshman year, and we had a mutual friend, a fellow named Roger Gordon, who brought Willard around the AU campus to show him the school. Willard was thinking of going there for his college curriculum. And he walked into the radio station, and we were doing a sort of a shakedown broadcast, and Willard walked into the studio and choked me down.
No, I actually threw up as I heard Eddie's voice for the first time.
And Roger,
and I said, that's incredible. That guy can work. If any can work, I can work. Anybody can work.
And Roger, his voice sounded like Henry Alger, said, hey, let her go in there, and he can't see, so just sneak behind the other side of the microphone and say something funny.
Well, I couldn't hear, so I said, what did you say, Roger? Now, so I sat there across from you, and you were terrific the way you sat there, you know, with your doing your little thing and reading the
Braille.
Reading the paper with his fingers. Yeah. That was terrific. I was impressed with that. I didn't pay attention to what you said. I thought that the fact that you could do that was wonderful.
So from that, we started.
Stevie Wonder, you got up and took a baseball bat and hit me in the head.
Yeah. So we would do little volunteer things for. We would entertain at college fraternity parties and stuff. And
notice, folks, we didn't hang around with girls. Aren't you a little bit suspicious?
Yeah.
We're already 12 minutes in the interview, and already we're going to college fraternities. We're, you know, talking to each other into a microphone in a dark studio. No mention of girls, and we're 18 years old.
Yeah,
Something's wrong with this picture.
The worst part of it is the first show we ever did together on the air was at WOL. And the program was called Going AWOL.
That was clever.
Yeah, that was...
That must have been your idea.
No. And we were on...
I'd say, I didn't interrupt you, but you know, the greatest thing that was really broke our hearts afterwards, at AMU, WAMU, we were doing our show, and we were doing our announcing, and these people would come by to watch us every day. I mean, it was true. There'd be 300 or 400 people sometimes walking around, and we didn't know until a month later, this is a true story, there was a modeling class in the next building where all these girls were posing.
It was the same building in the next room.
In the next room.
And dumb me, I didn't know that.
They weren't coming to see us, I don't think.
And Roger came in, this fellow I'd mentioned.
The guy with long raincoats.
He says, gee whiz, fellas, they got women over there.
That is a true story. And I did. I said, all these people standing outside, that's terrific. And they couldn't hear our station. First of all, our station, what a joke. I mean, it was sort of like talking to yourself. It was on a
waiting call. We were carrier current.
Yeah, you're on the electric line. You plug in an iron, you could hear us.
So for all the women, when they were ironing their undies or their dainties, could hear us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah, anyway.
If I'd known that, I would have left the studio.
All right, let's get to
the
material on this disc. The first thing that you will hear is a little skit we call The Yellow Ghost, and that was based on an old television show called The Gray Ghost. Willard, being a Virginia boy, always liked the Confederacy.
That's right, like the South.
And tell us about John Singleton Mosby.
John Singleton Nose Job, as we called him, was, like the Scarlet Pimpernel. You know, he was everywhere. And, in fact, they've got a highway named after him over there still. But it was a big TV show at the time, remember?
Yeah.
I've forgotten who starred in the thing. Do you remember?
No, I don't remember the guy's name.
Huh? It was a Disney show.
It was on film, I remember that.
It was the guy who did Fess Parker.
No, Davy Crockett was done by Fess Parker.
Maybe it was Fess Parker. Oh, he did himself.
It was brother Fess Up, I
think. Fess Up, that's right. Holy. Anyway, that was just one bit. Was that the bit that's on this tape?
That's the next bit you're going to hear.
And we mentioned the town on the opening, Spurryville, which is really a town where Mosby used to take his troops. And that's up near the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, Northern Virginia. And the real show and the real guy was quite a character. I mean, he really was very elusive, and he was a guerrilla fighter. He used to fight gorillas.
Gorillas, yes. Here, without any
find many gorillas.
Without any further ado, is the Yellow Ghost.
We took our men from Texas, from the backwoods, from the mountains, from the plains, from Levittown. But we lacked a number, we really lacked the brains. From north and south, they knew our fame. Yellow Ghost is what they call me. Chicken Little is my name.
The exciting adventures of the Yellow Ghost. The true stories of John Singleton Nosby, Confederate States of America. Today's exciting episode is entitled Commander of the Forces. As our story opens, we find Major Nosby and his Sergeant Miles, as the Major said.
These plans of attack I got from Richmond, Miles, look to be very complete.
The only one thing wrong, Major.
What's that?
The bridge is gone over Bull Run. We'll have to ford it.
Oh, yes.
I don't think we can afford it, Major.
I think you're right. The way you're talking today, Miles, sounds like your bridge is gone, too.
Yeah, you lost my bridge at Bull Run. That's the one we've lost.
Say, Miles.
Major.
One thing before we discuss any more battle strategy. What's the morale of the men? How are the men doing?
Major, Are you ready for this one?
Yes, well.
The oldest one in the business.
What's that?
Major, the men are revolting.
Now, I know that, Miles, but other than that, how are their spirits? Are they... They
well,
feel bad.
Run out of it, Major. The last supply train.
No, I mean, are they nervous or happy or what?
They've been pretty nervous lately, Major, but I think they found something to amuse themselves.
Really? What's that?
You'll get quite a kick out of this. You're a man with a sense of humor.
Hey, what do they have?
Come on in the barracks. I'll show you.
They got something that's over the...
See that over on the wall over there, and you made
What were they yelling and screaming about in there?
Didn't you see that picture they got hanging up on the wall?
Miles, I thought I told you before never to let pictures like that into these barracks. So this is time of war.
Major, they sent it
time.
In. Hmm? I see they sent it in from Richmond. I just, the men are having
sent
no
it
fun.
In. Miles, you've got to go in there and get that picture off that wall and bring it in here to me at once.
It'll tear their morale down, Major.
That's too bad, Miles, but I can't afford to have things like this going on in my barracks.
Being a Confederate sergeant, I'll do my best. I salute you, Major.
Thank you, Miles.
I get myself in the eye and the finger.
Go on and get that picture, will you,
I'll
Miles?
Go get it, Major.
I'll wait for you.
All right, you men.
Graceful, the way they yell in there. Well, Miles should be back in a minute. I'll just continue with these plans of attack here. I have no business. Oh. Well, I noticed it's quiet in there, Miles. You must have gotten the... Oh, yes, there's the picture.
Here's the picture, Major. The men are a little...
That is disgraceful, Miles.
Don't you think it's kind of cute, Major?
That is just ridiculous. Who in the world ever heard of Robert E. Lee in Bermuda shorts?
Major...
What?
I'm surprised it's you.
Well, it is, isn't it?
No, look again at this picture.
Looks like Lee to me. Who is it, Miles?
You let the beard fool you like the men did.
Who is it?
That's Commander Edward Whitehead doing a quinine commercial there. Oh. You were just as gullible as the men were.
That beard did fool me. Both North and South, they know our fame. Yellow Ghost is what they call me. Chicken Little is my name.
Tell the story of how we got to WOL and how we went trolling down the streets and visiting all the radio stations, and we went to the black station in town, owned by Richard Eaton.
Yeah, well, that was fun. That was funny.
That was a funny story.
We sat there in the lobby, and the song, they played rhythm and blues in those days. They didn't call it rock and roll. It was rhythm and blues. And we were sitting in the lobby of this station, which was the first black station in Washington, and the song they were playing was, I ain't in the mood. I ain't in the mood. I said, let's get out of here.
And we laughed.
I don't think the guy's going to hire us. And we went out and bought a car.
And that's, yeah, that's another story. There's there was a used car lot right near the radio station. So Willard said, I need a car to get to class. He didn't live on campus. And he had to get to class in the morning. And he said, I got, what, $200 was it you had
Man,
to buy
that's
a Plymouth?
Fine. He said, that'll work.
So tell the story. We went to the used car lot.
It was $98 for a 38 Plymouth. That's a true story. And the guy says to Eddie and me, he says, if it only goes around the block, it'll be a bargain.
Yeah, it's worth the parts.
It didn't go around the block. Went halfway around the block. And, of course, with all respect, I mean, I'm not a masochist, but Eddie doesn't see, so he couldn't drive.
So guess who pushed?
I had to get in the driver's seat and drive, and there's this blind guy pushing a 38 Plymouth around the block, and this hedonistic white bastard is sitting in the front seat driving the car.
As a result of that, I just had a hernia operation last week. I think that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. It's called fallout.
Yeah, and it almost did. Okay, we got this job at WOL. Willard was doing staff work on Sunday night, and we had a little show called Going AWOL at 11 o'clock. And to my amazement, years later, I found out that you know who used to listen to us, probably our only listener, was Pearl Bailey.
Oh, isn't that because she lived here in town?
She lived in town, and I ran into her few years later, and she says, oh, yeah, darling, says, I remember you guys, you were funny on the Joy Boys show, and, you know, well, we weren't the Joy Boys.
We, at that time, WOL, you got to remember, was 250 watts, and it was at 1490 on the end, that was below police calls. You had to get a chisel and break the dial to get the radio thing to move down that far. And truthfully, the station's transmitter was in the Union Station.
Over, near Union Station over on Pierce Street.
The railroad yard, which means that they were the ground. Nobody cares about this. But the ground of the radio station transmitter was in the railroad yard, and they could hear us on the railroad tracks. The signal carried all the way to Fredericksburg, which was 50 miles away, but they couldn't hear us. You know, two blocks
at your house.
Well, I said, you don't. Our house is, we live in Alexandria. That's like overseas. But it was a worse signal. It was television had just started and gotten big. Nobody listened. One lady used to come in, off the street. I remember a lovely
street person.
She would come in and sit. In those days, he left the doors open. I mean, you didn't worry about any. She was a sweet woman that just came in and listened to our show every Sunday night in the dark in a little studio, and then she left. Never said, I don't think I ever said two words.
No, I never.
But I think she liked the show.
I don't think she had a home, Willard. I think that was the whole idea. She had no place to go, so she'd come in
this week.
Yeah.
Rachel. Remember Rachel?
Rachel.
Yeah.
That was her name, Rachel. Arthur Codfish. Willard does a great impression of Arthur Codfish. Actually, Arthur Godfrey, and Willard called him Arthur Codfish. That's the next thing we're going to
do. And what did Tony Meatball was his announcer, right? Tony Marvin?
Right, Alder.
And the thing of it is, with Godfrey, he started here. Well, he actually started, I think, in Baltimore, didn't he? But
mm-hmm.
he started and got his fame in Washington, D.C., at WMAL Radio, at one of the radio stations that we also knew here in town. And he was a morning man, and I believe they fired him because he didn't show up for work on time. Half the time he was late. But Godfrey later went over to WJSV, it was called now WTOP, and the rest is history. They found him in 1944. They took him up to New York, and Godfrey's folksy, off-the-wall, laid back. He belched on the air. Remember, he was the Howard Stern of that type of radio.
He wasn't language. Dirty. He was but suggestive,
he was a rebel. He was a rebel, yeah. and it worked. And he became the number one moneymaker for CBS. They said after his show went off at 11 o'clock, everything CBS made was profit. And this broke my heart because when he died, hardly anybody showed up for his funeral, number one. And number two is I talked to people in broadcasting that they never heard of him. At one time, he had five of the top shows on television and radio. I mean, it was incredible. He had the five top shows on television. So anyway, that's Arthur Godfrey and his friends.
Well, here he is.
And now, Ready Fly. The prefabricated paper airplane for the busy executive who's too busy to fold his own.
Whee!
Brings you author Codfish Time.
Well, son of a gun, go.
Ready Fly, makers of executive yo-yos and executive coloring books, among other things.
Whee!
Here's author flying his airplane, Codfish.
Hey!
Father, how do you applaud and play the youth at the same time?
Use my nose. Why don't you use your head? Golly, Ned, it's nice to have a cold in the head. How are you? How are you,
Father?
Nice to see so many fine people. Fizzled out in the studio here.
Arthur's not like you have a sinus condition.
Yes, I forgot to leap when I left. How are you? Ready Fly, the greatest name in prefabricated airplanes for executives who are too busy to build their own.
I said that, Arthur. Yes. They're very handy for the busy man on the go. And
you're going to be a busy man on the go if you keep ad-libbing because
I'm
talking, Beep Bob.
I just noticed, Arthur, we have no guests in the studio the last few programs. Is the budget start on the program?
New, not exactly new.
What is it, Arthur?
Well, we've gotten some letters from our friends in Radio Land who've asked us to reminisce a little bit. They know that collectively, you and I, Tony, have a combination of 320 years in show business.
Arthur, would you like a handkerchief? The nasal quality.
And I thought it would be terribly nice if we could discuss a little bit some of the nice days in the beginning when we first started in this rat race.
Yes, Arthur, I can remember my early days in radio.
We're going to discuss mine.
Oh, pardon me, Arthur.
You can discuss yours with your wife.
Go right ahead, Arthur.
I was just thinking, you know, things were so much nicer back in 1927 when I first got that job in Baltimore.
Yes, well, in 1924, Arthur, when I first started out. Oh, we're not discussing
it tomorrow night on the
radio. Yes, Arthur, back in 1927, it was, of course, in the midst of a depression, and I would imagine that people were staying home listening to their radio.
Well, not exactly, because the depression didn't come till 1929. You were always a smart aleck. You probably foresaw that, too.
I was building up to it, Arthur.
I was thinking how nice it was because I only made... You know how much money I made then? Look at this suit I got on right here.
Yes, fabulous suit, Arthur.
$340 suit.
Yes, Arthur.
Got it for one appearance on the Jack Parr show. But I only made $35 a week.
Is that right, Arthur?
That's right.
$35.
You know, I was a happier man then.
Is that right, Arthur?
I had no troubles, no income tax to worry about.
Yes, Arthur.
And all the girls. I was a wild one with my ukulele.
Yeah, I bet you were, Arthur. Serenading them in the moonlight.
I shouldn't have had that cigarette sponsor for 10 years. Just about ruined me.
Well, Arthur.
But it was so much nicer. $35 a week, nice friends. Everybody was sincere. Now you got to watch out because, boy, you never know who's going to do it.
The more you make, Arthur, the more is expected of you, the more.
$15,000 a minute, and I'm miserable.
Yes, well, Arthur, it can be.
Good days with the best days is no So you got a loud telephone.
Mr. Codfish's studio.
The old days were the best days, I'll tell you.
Yes.
We used to have more fun down in Washington.
Bill Bailey out there.
Come home.
No.
We used to the executive.
Wants to talk to you.
Oh, my old pal Billy.
Yes.
Come on down.
Just don't leave the studio. He's on his way.
Who's leaving the studio? I got a good thing. I'm not going to leave the studio.
Yes, Oliver.
We used to have fun down in Washington, too. I was the morning man. I used to get up early. I used to get up about 4 o'clock in the morning. Boy, that was nice.
Oliver, baby, how are you? Good to see you there, Arnie.
Won't you sit down, Bill Bailey?
What if I do, Art? I say I'm just listening to your show out there.
Well, it's about time after 13
really,
years.
Really, you have a wonderful show.
People say the only reason we've been on all these years is because you never listen.
I gotta make them laugh. That's all I can.
Well, I was just listening to what you were talking about, Art, about being so much happier back in 1927 when you make your 30.
Things were really nice. You know, I used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd see all the nice birds, and I'd see the sun come up. I miss all that, you know.
Really, do you, Art?
Yes, I do.
I'm here to tell you, fellow, that we're here to do you a favor. We're going to put you right back where you were in 1927. You're going on the air at 4 o'clock in the morning
for
$35 a week. You'll start tomorrow, Art.
Oh, well, all's not lost. I still got meatball.
No, tomorrow we're not going to discuss my early days. I can tell you that much. Oh.
But meatball, I need you here. I'm nothing without somebody to say,
And then we ended up at WRC. Well, Willard got there before I did. And you might want to tell the story of how I came to join you at WRC.
Well, the only thing I remember was that the Lone Ranger or something went on. It was the Whitnor Corollaires, wasn't it? Then weren't they on, and then they canceled the show, and then they put us on. I'd have forgotten.
Well, you were over there. You started a show as the soap operas would go off. Willard had become the summer relief announcer, and one of the announcers left. So Willard got to be the full-time announcer.
I remember that.
And they gave him the evening shift so he could do his college homework, sit in the break booth, and every half hour say Channel 4. Which he got big bucks for doing that.
$8,000 a year.
Yeah. So he said at the time, he said, I'll get you over here sometime. And he talked him into letting me audition with him.
Always like to plug a person that did favors. Carl Smith was the general manager.
Right.
A wonderful friend. And he got Eddie over here because he'd been a fan of mine like me. And so we were on at 7 o'clock. But something to do with the Lone Ranger, I remember. What happened?
The Lone Ranger was on at 7 o'clock. And,
well, how could we be on at 7
o'clock? Well, that's when you had a show at 7 o'clock. That's before our Joy Boy show, which was at 1 in the afternoon.
Well, when did the Whitmore Corollaires come into it?
I didn't remember that one.
Or the Longines Symphonette. They were on, too. I think the Lone Ranger was only on 3 nights a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, right?
Yep.
And the Whitmore, the Longines.
Oh, they gave you that show from 7 to 7:30.
What show?
The one that the Lone Ranger was on.
Oh, what happened? Where did he go? Did he ride off? Oh! Yeah, he had a hernia, I think. Did he? When he did that?
Oh, hold on.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Silver. Hi.
I'm Silver.
Anyway.
And he's cold.
We got the first show we had on the WRC was called Two at One. Another great title.
Because we were on at 1 o'clock.
And there were two of us.
We thought, see how things happen like this.
And that lasted for a while till you went in the Navy. And I did your program, which was called Twilight Tunes, while you were in the Navy.
Toilet Tunes, I thought.
That's really what it was, but I don't want to say that. And Carlton Smith had called me into his office, and he said, we're going to let you do this show, Ed, but I want you to know something. He said, and this is a true story, too. He said, Willard Scott has the uncanny ability to do a program and sound like he is in your living room, very informal.
That's me.
There's a long pause, and he said, sometimes this can be embarrassing.
He didn't say
yeah,
that.
He didn't.
He wasn't so hot. I thought he was a nice guy.
Stella Bear. What can you say about Stella Bear?
Well, there was a soap opera for years called Stella Dallas, which was on. She'd been a lady of the evening. She'd been kind of a... this was really kind of risque for radio back in the 40s. You know, she had a questionable background. because remember she sent Lolly Baby,
her
daughter off to school and everything. And
that's right.
There was never a Mr. Stella Dallas, if you maybe recall that. I mean,
I do recall that.
Yeah, well, anyway, so this was a very, very much listened to soap opera in the afternoon. And Stella had a heart, you know, big heart, wonderful, you know.
Yeah.
Ada Dexter was one of her, forget that. Here's Stella Dallas. Or
Stella Bear.
Bear.
And now, King Kong Birdseed.
the greatest name in bird seed? The only bird seed that makes your parakeet look like an ape, sound like a lion, and gentle as a bear brings you
the
heartwarming story of just plain Stella Bear and her fight for love and happiness.
And now?
Starring the gifted stage and screen star, Margaret Hartburn, in the title role of kindly old lady Bear. It's early afternoon as our story opens. We find ourselves in the bear house. It's Papa Bear and Papa Bear. They're looking over the warheads.
Look at this. Look at these bills here, Ma.
We're looking over the warheads, I said.
Looking over the warheads. See if anybody wants a 38-year-old boy. No. Mm-hmm. Something's bugging me, Ma.
Have you tried?
Ma, listen to me.
The best breakfast food in the land.
Stop reading that Jack Armstrong comic.
Whatever happened to Jack Armstrong?
I don't know.
Remember when we was kids, Pa?
Yeah, but that was before Jack Armstrong.
Used to sit around the Super Heterodyne.
Yeah.
That's a meat market down at the corner of 8th and Granby. And listen to...
Ma, look at this. Look at these food bills.
What's that, Paul?
Look at this. $25 for bread last week. Now, that's fantastic.
Well, we had to feed the birds, don't you know?
10 cases of soft drinks.
Where a bird in Herbert.
Isn't
room.
That ridiculous? Where in the world are we getting all of... Herbert eats a lot, I know, but...
How you doing, Mr. Bear?
Hello there, sonny. Who was that kid?
It's one of Herbert's playmates from down the street.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Paul. It just seems...
How you doing, Mr. Bear?
Hello, Charlie.
Yes.
A lot of them coming in today, aren't they?
I guess Herbert's got a...
I was just saying, I don't...
Oh, Mr. Bear, Mr. Bear.
Wait a minute, Paul.
Hmm?
One of these kids, they run in the front door and they go down the basement. Now, what's going on?
Come on, Mr. Bear.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Better call Herbert and find out what's going on.
No, better yet, let's go down the basement ourselves and see what's happening.
Come on. Open the door here.
Okay, kids, just go right on over here. Herbert!
This is your mother. Don't she recognize me?
Oh, hello, Mrs. Bear. I mean, hello, Ma.
What do you got behind the kitchen door going on there in the basement?
Well, I just started up a new business establishment here. I got my own little gaslight club, you see.
What do you mean?
Well, I have the kids come down and pay $5 for a key, and they can come in any time and buy... soft drinks for 50 cents a piece and the sandwiches are a penny.
I don't believe... Herbert,
hmm?
Unlock that door to the basement and let's see what you've got going on in there.
I don't believe you. Well, all right. A swinging combo down here.
How much did you say a key was, Herbert?
$5.
Paul, give him $5.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
Okay, come on. You're charter members now.
$5 and you get to do a little dancing. Laugh it up a little, I guess. You know, kids like to do jolly bunch of life. King Kong Birdseed, the greatest name of birdseed, has again brought you Just Plain Stella Bear, the story of love and tenderness in a world too busy to care. Starred Margaret Hartburn in the title role of kindly old lady Bear. Based on the book, Not Enough Soon Enough by Claudia Clive. Adapted for radio by...
Geraldine Fitzgerald.
I had a little thing in my throat there. I knew what was happening. This bit of Sherman D. Tank production.
Now...
You did that, you idiot.
Sorry.
So Willard gets out of the Navy, and then we were on in the afternoon, and then Willard got tapped to do the Bozo bit on television. So then we moved into the evening. And that's where we were most of the time, like 8 to 11 or something like that.
This could well be the most boring biography of anybody in the history of show business.
I'm sure it is. Oh, yeah. Willard became Bozo the Clown, and so we couldn't do the show together in the afternoon, so they moved us to 7 o'clock at night. At that time, the Armed Forces Radio called us and said, would you make an extra copy of your shows and send it to us, and we'll play it for the servicemen overseas and cut out the commercials, which was part of our act.
That
anyway.
Wasn't very tough to do on our show.
So
the sales department cut most of them out.
So we kept the Vietnam War going a lot longer than it needed to be.
Yeah, we made them fighting mad over there. Oh, if it hadn't been for us, the Congo had left years.
That's right.
We have a couple of distinguished gentlemen from the Armed Forces Radio Service here, Willard. You know, we've told them the show is heard overseas and everything, and they came down to see us.
Well, we just didn't believe it was possible. We had to see it with our own ears.
Never seen it quite like it in my life before.
Ridiculous.
They didn't like the show, so they left, evidently.
And a lot of the Joy Boys material that exists today is off of those AFRS transcriptions.
That was probably the hottest thing ever happened to us, really.
Yeah.
Because we got worldwide coverage, so to speak.
But no money.
Oh, no. We never made any money, but that's it. Artists don't make money till they're dead. You don't look too hot now, if you want to know the truth. I think you're in for some big money.
Next is we call the Sod Buster, which was our version of Gunsmoke. I was U.S. Marshal Matt Dillard, and you were my sidekick, Chester Drawers.
That's my group.
Remember that?
That's me.
Well, here it is.
From out of Northwest on MacArthur Boulevard come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Platinum. With a cloud of dust and a hearty hi-ho slobber, the Sodbuster rides again. Nowhere in the pages of history can you find a greater champion of justice, a more fearless, hard-riding, straight-shooting, beer-drinking, pizza-eating son of a sod. It's the Sodbuster. A true gentleman of the old school. Men feared him, little children respected him, women loved him. A true gentleman of the old West.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Got the right to warm up. Return with us now to the thrilling days of any old years. We find roaming about the wild badlands of the West, the Sodbuster. The Sodbuster, U.S. Marshal Matt Dillard, and his sidekick, Chester Drawers.
Come here, Chester.
Yes, yes. Marshal, you kick me right in the side.
Dead center.
In and around the territory of Hyattsville, on out beyond Tacoma Park, out towards Wheaton and Rockville, rode the Sodbuster, U.S. Marshal Matt Dillard. As our story opens, we find ourselves in the Marshal's office. Apparently, Chester and a group of the gang had decided to have dinner for Miss Kitty and Doc Williams. Our story opens, we find the Marshal saying,
"Well, it's nice that Chester and a group of the gang are having dinner for Kitty and Doc Williams, you know. Chester, is dinner almost done?"
"Almost done, Mr. Dillard."
"It certainly is nice of you to have us over, Chester. We...
I'm glad to do it."
"Yeah, Chester, it was wonderful. Gesture, Chester, yes, it's Gesture, Chester." "Oh, Doc, that was pretty corny, you know. Well, let's all sit down now and begin eating. What do you think?"
"Right here. Sit down here, Miss Kitty.
Thank you very much.
I got little nameplates there for you."
"Sorry we don't have any silverware, folks. We'll have to use chopsticks. We couldn't, Chester whittled those out there, didn't you,
Chester?" "I got an emery board for your nails so you can spear the meat pretty good, all right?"
"Yeah, that's very thoughtful of you, Chester."
"Here's yours, Marshal."
"Thank you."
"Doc?"
"Thank you."
"All right. So
thank you very much,
Marshal, Doc."
"Yes, thank you, Chester."
"And here's
what is this we're having
here? Here's mine over here."
"I noticed you gave yourself the biggest serve in there, Chester."
"I did all the work."
"Oh, I see. What do you call that stuff you got there?"
"Called chicken a la Bat Masterson. Here, just...
It's like a bear steak, Chester."
"Oh, yeah, it's
everybody
bear.
Dig in here."
"Mm. Yeah, bear. I shot this bear myself this morning."
"My, that's very good, Chester. It's very tasty, you know."
"Well, I appreciate that, Miss Kitty. I hope..."
"Yeah, Chester, it's the best bear steak I've ever had in a long
time." "Well, you know, you can't get bear steak too much anymore. They don't have sales on it none of the..."
"You went out and shot this one yourself, didn't you, Chester?"
"Sure did, Marshal. Mm-hmm. Got it
myself. Is delicious, Chester."
"That's right.
Sure it is, Chester. I want to..."
"There's nothing like good fresh bear meat, you know."
"Chester, there's only one thing that's bothering me about the whole thing here."
"What's that, Marshal?"
"Well, Chester, seems to me you should have done a better job of cleaning the buckshot out of the bear steak when you killed him after that."
"Well, if you're going to complain, you can just..." "Uh-oh, I think I swallowed a piece of shot, Marshal. Hit me on the back, will you?"
The Sodbuster is written by Bobby Dick. Produced by the NBC Newsroom on the weekend. Directed by Horace Opera. The entire production is supervised for NBC Radio by Billy the Kid. This has been a Saddle Surf production.
we got to talk about WWPU. Originally, that was WWVO in Seagram's, West Virginia, which we thought was a very funny...
Get that? Seagram's? VO?
Yeah. Well, the management at NBC got that, and they called us up in the office and said, you guys can't do that anymore. That's a plug for a sponsor, alcohol.
Yeah.
Seagram's VO, you can't use that. So we had to change it, and hence WWPU and Sorghums.
And everybody in those days listened to the radio at night, and you'd hear WWVA, which is a great, still on the air, great station in Wheeling, West Virginia. And every Saturday night they had the West Virginia, what was it, not the barn dance, but the...
WWVA. Jamboree. They had an all-night
Jamboree.
There was an all-night disc jockey named Lee Moore.
That's right.
The coffee-drinking Nighthawk.
That's right.
So we created... His brother, and we had Hoot Moore and his brother No Moore.
And do you know, two months ago, the Grand Ole Opry 75th anniversary, I worked with Wilma Lee, who was still a beautiful guitar player, and she was with Stoney Cooper, who was also star of the WWVA Wheeling Jamboree. But we just had fun, because all the commercials in those days, I think they were called like PIs, was that what they were called?
Yeah, inquiry.
You only got paid with the results that you got from people calling and buying the product. And so they were always stuff like 100 baby chicks for sale for $1.98. And every once in a while we'd throw in a rooster just to make them exciting. That's for the chicks. Nothing like excited a chick like a rooster.
The light's ready. Let's switch down now to WWPU Sorghum, West Virginia.
Hey, how you doing, everybody? All you pee pickers out there in the radio land, welcome to the all-night country music picking and singing jamboree from the country music capital of the world, WWPU in Sorghum, West Virginia.
I don't care who you are.
Now, this is your old coffee-drinking night owl, Hootmore. My brother, No, is on the phone. No! No. Stop beating up the salesman, No. Get on the air here, will you?
Sick to death, them salesmen hanging their shorts over the transmitter to dry. I mean, that's disgusting. One of them was in them.
Better than last year. Last year they didn't have no shorts.
He's lobbing a short out the transmitter.
Well, we never needed that salesman anyway.
Didn't really need the transmitter.
We're going to be here for about 14 hours of continuous music and picking and singing.
I'm picking and he's scratching.
That's
we
right.
Love everything about you. Just if you don't kill that thing,
you want me to fade that out now,
I'm going to ram this microphone right down your throat.
Which one of them things turns it? No, that's
look
the one.
At his eyes in there. Engineers, you can know where he's been up in the holler last week because his eyes all bloodshot look like a road map. Drinking all that white lightning. It's disgusting. Man come in here with a breath like that, lit a match, and blew three doors off.
Well, you can tell it's going to be a fun night here in the old corral, don't you? All right, our first sponsor this week, friends and neighbors, is the Adenoid School of Radio announcing of Loudmouth, Maryland.
That's right, Smart Alex's group, friend. You all know Smart Alex. You see him on TV. Well, this is the summer budget, and they can't afford TV, so they're on radio. And you can imagine how far down the ladder they've come, because they're on our show. Friends, how'd you like to be a radio announcer? You think your voice is only good for calling hogs, flopping pigs, or calling the wife, huh? Well, that just ain't necessary. Slapping the wife? No, that ain't gonna work. We're a fool around with that one. It ain't necessarily so, beloved.
That's right, friends. Now, we want you to hear what Mr. Otis Bumgartner has to say about the success that he's had after getting his adenoids course. Otis?
Now, thank you just a whole lot. I had the adenoids course, and I think it did me worlds of good, and it also helped me find a fine job.
Where are you working, Mr. Bumgartner?
Well, I announce the arrival and the departure of buses down at the depot.
Now, friends, just like Otis, if you enroll right away, we'll send you free a copy of that bestseller, Well, Shut My Mouth, by that famous radio and TV newsman, David Hot Lips Rush. It was old Hot Lips who scooped the entire industry back in 59 by reporting the great eclipse of the sun of 64. Due to a slight miscalculation, however, he said it would occur in 75 and would be an eclipse of the moon. But only them small-minded and petty people attempt to try to find fault with Brother Dave's predictions. Anyway, his voice was great.
Absolutely. Now, also, we are going to throw in, at no extra cost, an autographed picture of Evelyn Fryman. Who's a big union guru around the town here. Now, later on, Evelyn may just send you another autograph attached to a little old suspension if you don't cough up them there union dues.
That's right, friends. Just send $2.98 to Hoot and Holler, Adenoid School of Radio announcing WWPU Loudmouth, Maryland.
Howard, I fell out of love with love. When my lover fell in love with my best friend, I tried to kick it in, and that predicament.
Well, Cherie, that's about all the time we have for another week get-together here. It was pretty weak this week, I'll tell you. We'll be back next week if the creek don't rise and the sponsors don't cancel. Until then, this is your old coffee-drinking night owl. Hoot more. Your brother Noah going to tell you where Lazy Luther and the Sugarloaf Mountain Board are going to be appearing this here week.
Right on, you silly goose.
Yes, sir.
What I heard the manager say the other day to his friend. Anyway, Lazy Luther and the Sugarloaf Mountain Boys next Monday will be appearing at the Potted Plant Pottery Makers in Sunflower, Kansas.
Wonderful.
Next Tuesday and Wednesday at the Jug Band Auditions at Saul Cider Mill, McIntosh, Maryland. And then next Thursday afternoon and Friday morning at the Ralph Nader Nitty Gritty Roller Coaster Ride at Marshall Hall Amusement Park. And finally next Saturday afternoon at Saul Spring Sheep Dip at Ram Charge, Montana. Thanks a whole lot and a heap for calling. The old buckboard will be back again just as soon as we get the ball joints fixed.
That's right. So long, friends and neighbors. And remember, a slip of the lip could sink a ship. We'll see you next week.
You got an old copy, I think. Let me look at that thing. It's 1942.
The continuing true-to-life story, As the Worm Turns, the story of my life today in a big city hospital, and all brought to you by Scott No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray your little children to protect them from other little children. It's early afternoon as our story opens in Big City Hospital today. We find ourselves outside of the office of the highly respected throat surgeon, Dr. Clayton Jackson Durante. Dr. Durante was awakened in the middle of the night by a telephone call from a top 40 radio station where the all-night disc jockey had some pleading moments with the doctor. The doctor, being true to the medical profession, told him to call back in the morning, which he did. Outside the door now, pacing nervously, fiddling with his cigarette pack, he nervously lights his cigarette. There's a moment as he puffs, thinking to himself, what could this possibly be? Finally, the doctor knocks on the door.
Sorry. Let me try it again, all right?
We haven't been here for months. Go ahead.
Old habits are hard to break.
Doctor knocks on the door. Forget it. Come on in. And the young DJ, Pearly White, speaks.
Doc?
Yeah, what is it, Junior?
Dr. Durante?
Yeah, that's me, Clayton Jackson Durante.
Doc?
Come on in and sit down, Junior.
I am sitting down.
Oh, you're right. Just short, huh, kid? I've got a million of them.
Doc,
stop that. Try to get over
Doc,
that, will you, kid?
I needed that. I got something that's rather personal that happened to me at the studio last week, and I first noticed it after I'd had a date with a switchboard operator.
Let me ask you something, kid. Does she have a sister?
Well, what have we here? What happened to the young top 40 disc jockey after he had his date with the switchboard operator? You won't want to miss the next gripping episode as the Worm Turns 1 hour from now, when you'll hear the young DJ, Pearly White, speak to Dr. Girardi and say... Apparently, the young man is speechless. Be listening 1 hour from now when Scuff No More once more brings you The Worm Turns. Written for radio by Denise on Damon De Valero. Produced by Tondal A.O.T. Thomas. A Damon Del Tandel production. Comes to you from Washington. Till 3:15.
You created a character called Betty Crockett, which was based on Betty Crocker, the homemaker and the recipe lady. And I guess... You did a little bit like Bob and Ray's Mary Magoon. Can you still do that voice?
Which one? Oh, who was Betty?
Betty.
See, you dip your fudgesicle right here in the nice cream pudding. Oh, isn't the texture lovely? Good fudge. Hallelujah. It's, that was Betty, sort of.
Betty Crocker. Well, here she is and her recipe for cream puff au zippier.
Yeah. Remember our boumier. That's the same product. Yeah. From the Boumier Company.
So we walk on down the hall to the experimental kitchen right here. And,
it's time for another visit with WRC's cooking expert and home economist, Betty Crockett.
All right, let's lean on the door here. We got enough.
I'll push this. Here we go.
And greetings. And welcome into the kitchen here. WRC is proud to present our home economist, Miss Betty Crockett, the queen of the kitchen range. And here she is, with her hand in the... With her hand in the deep freeze, Betty Crockett.
With the blue.
Welcome, Betty, and greetings.
Almost blew you up there, didn't I, Eddie?
Yes, you did.
Hello, girls. How are you?
Betty, how are you looking? Wonderful.
Wonderful looking, Eddie, Betty. I'm sure glad to see you. We got to have some apple Betty on the show.
Betty, can I have some of your apple?
Get your hands off my apple fritter.
Okay.
You old son of a gun. And we really had ourselves...
You've been touching that eggnog a little there, too.
Fruitcake's really gotten fixed up good there. You know, it's been sitting in the icebox soaking up all that jazz there.
We were wondering if you had some exciting new recipe idea that the girls might use to lighten up their meals a bit.
Absolutely not, Eddie. Nothing's going on between now and spring, and I just don't have nothing much.
Real drag, huh?
Actually, I did have a little...
Can I have just a smidge of
Arthur! Get your hands off my old plow cake pudding there. We got something the girls might go for in a big way. It's a real cute little novelty, don't you?
Oh, yeah? A man?
What is it? No. You sly old Porfirio Rubaruzzo, you. I don't know. Yes, I do, Eddie.
Well, tell me about it.
What was the question a minute ago?
I said you said you had something the girls might go for.
That's right.
What is it?
It's a wonderful new dessert idea.
A wonderful new dessert idea. Let me get the pencil and paper here.
A French dish called cream puff au zippier.
Let's write that down. Now, girls, you got your pencil and papers there. Cream puff au zippier?
Au zippier. That's French for zipper.
I don't understand the connection between a cream puff and a zipper.
Well, you know, when you eat a cream puff, 9 times out of 10, you bite into one end of it, and all the cream comes
squirts out the other. Yeah, I've had that happen all over the pants and everything.
Well, I've got a wonderful little zipper product here that's made out of plastic.
You have one of these made? I'd like to see
it. Sure, here's a little zipper over here.
The cream puff has a zipper. This is a very interesting thing. The cream puff has a zipper sewed on the top and bottom layer, and I assume that the cream is in the middle.
The cream is in the middle, and of course the chocolate's on top, and the puff is right.
I suppose I want to eat this. What do I do?
Well, you just give me the here. Take the zipper.
All right.
All right, now eat down that much of it, see? Now notice how the cream is staying, the zipper's holding it.
Just the part that I unzipped is part that's coming out.
Well, zip some more here. Pretty good, huh?
That's very good.
Then you can zip the whole thing back up. Restuff it with cream, and you got yourself another cream.
You can reuse the shell.
That's right.
That's very
good. No return,
no
deposit zipper.
No deposit plastic zipper.
That's
for cream puff. Are these available at your favorite store?
I doubt it.
I doubt it, too. Well, thank you, Betty. It's been nice visiting with you.
Goodbye, Eddie.
Goodbye, Betty.
Good to see you.
Can I have a little
Arthur, come here.
Yes,
sir. That's on general principle.
I don't think he fell on his general principles. Anyway, we say goodbye to Betty Crockett's Experimental Kitchen. Look out for the door. It's closing, everybody. Go!
Walker and Scott, the Joy Boys. Time here at WRC, 16 and a half minutes after 3. And for those of you who missed the first hour, we are doing A Worm Turns a little differently today. We're doing it one episode every hour so that we can complete the cycle before we complete this cycle.
That was not necessary.
That's what I told them, but they did it anyway.
And now, the continuing Twitter Live story, As the Worm Turns. The story of Laha today in a big city hospital, and all brought you by Scott No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray your little children to protect them from noxious growth and certain weeds indigenous to the metropolitan area. You may recall 1 hour ago when we last met you, we were in the office of the very kind and beloved doctor in Big City, General Dr. Clayton Jackson Durante. Dr. Durante is a throat specialist and had been visited by a top 40 rock jock who had called him just 2 nights before around midnight with a certain problem. The doctor, as all good doctors do when you call them in the middle of the night, told him to take an aspirin and call back in the morning, if indeed he was able. Well, he was indeed able. And so the young, pearly white, 26-year-old rock jock did indeed call back and make an appointment with the doctor. As our story closed the last hour, you may recall there was a knock on the door.
I'm sorry, I forgot. It's the knock, not the bell, right?
That's all right. Go right ahead.
Try to kill me again, will you?
There was a knock at the door. Just one knock.
Okay.
There was a knock at the door. The door opened.
In stepped the young jock, perspiring somewhat, nervously walking back and forth.
How do you make the sound of somebody perspiring?
Pat your forehead.
Ah.
Yeah. You look silly.
Uh-huh.
As the young jock speaks to the doctor, he informs him that he has a problem. It occurred, apparently, the day after he took the switchboard operator out to dinner. Well, what have we here? Hmm. The young jock speaks.
Doc, I got this terrible problem, Doc, that I only
what did you have for lunch?
Only a medical man like you, Doctor Durante, could possibly help me with. Doc, if
Kid, you sound like a tape recorder going at the wrong speed.
You don't understand.
With a voice like mine, I'd have to be a throat surgeon.
I'm the idol of a
million titty buffers, Doc, and
I did this all night rock show at this
top 40 operation.
I think your battery's going bad, Kid.
The terrible thing happened after I took the
switchboard operator out to lunch the other day.
Well. What does the young switchboard operator have to do with the plot? Seems to me there's something else wrong here.
What does the plot have to do with the young switchboard operator?
You won't want to miss the next hour's thrilling episode, As the Worm Turns, when you'll hear Dr. Clayton Durante speak to the young jock and tell him this.
Everybody wants to get into the act.
The Worm Turns is written for radio. That's as good as any I suppose.
He used it for years.
By Denise and Damon De Valero, and produced by Tondale O.T. Thomas. This is indeed a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Washington. Until the next hour. Top low budget.
I think I got a way to make the sound of a guy sweating.
Forget it.
Robin Hood of Rock Creek Park, another one of the Joy Boys creations. It was a have local vintage. Robin Hood, of course, who stole from the rich and kept it all for himself.
That was our guy.
That was him. Yeah. Anyway, and we had his band of merry men, Little John, Alan the Dale, and who else was in his band of men? Anyway, on this routine,
Friar Tuck
is in there, yeah. Well, and
it was Washington, too, because Rock Creek is a beautiful park in Washington. A lot of people know that. But that's why it was kind of fun. And, of course, Robin Hood was a very well-known character, and we just gave him the local, you know.
And on this bit, he goes and his men go to the library.
That's interesting. I didn't know him couldn't read.
Or go to the dogs, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And now, the National Broadcasting Company brings you the adventures of Robin Hood of Rock Creek Park.
Robin Hood, riding through the glen. Robin Hood, with his band of men. Feared by the bad, loved by the good. Robin Hood, Robin Hood, Robin Hood.
Ken Bobby, the greatest name in Bobby Pins, brings you the adventures of Robin Hood of Rock Creek Park. Today's exciting story is entitled, Robin Hood and His Men Discover Culture. As our story opens, we find ourselves riding through the thicket outside of Rock Creek Park.
Oh, there's a friend! Robin, a friend! Hey, Robin, hey, ho, 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 and ho, 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 ho,
ho. Oh, dismount, men.
Little John, when are you going to learn to dismount from your horse?
I told my horse to quit riding me there. We've got to learn this thing the right way.
I do believe it, though, men. I've called you all together here because we're going to pay a visit to the public library. Now, men, it's about time that we, of the merry man, a merry band of men, I'm going to get a book on reading while I'm here. We need culture. Right, Little John?
Aye, Robin, we need culture.
Right, Friar Tuck?
Aye, Robin, I'm a vulture for culture.
Aye, Robin, I'm a...
I didn't ask you yet, Alan Adale.
Keep your mouth shut.
Now, men, one thing you must remember, this is a library. People are reading and studying in here.
Quiet, Robin.
You must be quiet at all times. We talk in a whisper.
Can I bring my horse in with me, Robin?
Don't be silly, of course not.
Sorry, Trigger.
Now,
come
to the door of the library, gentlemen.
Aye, Robin.
Now remember to be quiet at all times. I will just open the door and we'll walk in. The librarian is over there. I'll ask her for the book.
I think my father's been gone with...
Hey, you're going to have to be quiet. This is a public library.
Look at that funny-looking guy over there, Robin, sitting there reading the racing form.
No, that's
the Batman. He's been out of work now for about 7 years.
I don't think so. Miss, I'm looking for a volume of the Prehistoric Encyclopedia.
I told you, sir, you're going to have to be quiet. This is a public library.
I'm sorry, Robin. I haven't been smoking but about another 6 months ago, and I burned myself.
Little John, would you please be quiet?
Now then.
Sir, if you don't be quiet, I'm going to have to ask all of you and your band of men to leave this library.
Robin.
Yeah.
I didn't see her in rehearsal. Who's that?
That's the librarian.
Oh.
We needed an extra at the last moment.
Who read her part during rehearsal?
I don't know. I think it was Little John. Well, I see that we're not going to get anywhere here.
Sorry, sir, but we don't have the book you asked for.
You're not the librarian, Little John. Get from behind that counter. What are you doing?
Oh. I'm sorry, sir. We don't have the book you wished for. That's my line.
Hey, who is that girl?
If you don't mind, I'd appreciate it if you all kindly leave. You're making entirely too much noise in this library.
All right.
Let's go. Come on, ma'am. Sorry, madam.
Robin, before we get our horses and ride out of here, because it's 30 seconds before the end of the show, I have a question I'd like to ask you.
Yes?
What books are we going after, and why do we need the books?
Some prehistoric volumes of an encyclopedia I once read, and they're just the exact thickness for propping up the short legs of our pool table men. We've got to have those books, or else we cannot shoot pool.
Hi, Robin the friend. This has been a Hood Roy production.
Citizens Bank of Maryland, conveniently yours.
And now, the continuing Twitter Lie story, as the worm turns, the story of Lie High today in the Big City Hospital in Massey Hackman, and all brought to you by Scott No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age that protects your little children from certain noxious growth and weeds indigenous to the area. Scott No More. It's early afternoon at Big City General Hospital, and we are in the office once again of the kindly old doctor, Dr. Clayton Jackson Durante. Dr. Durante is ink-a-dinking his due, as you may gather in the background. The good doctor is a throat specialist and also a leg man, I understand, from some of the younger nurses.
That's right, Jim.
But we won't discuss that here.
We won't discuss that.
The good doctor was awakened early this morning by a telephone call. Need a new battery on that one, apparently. A telephone call from a young rock jock from the station WHAME Whammy Radio. The all-night man apparently had some problem. He rushed into the office this morning and spoke to the doctor, and it was discovered that he had taken out the switchboard operator the night before.
Editor's note, if WHAME had FM, then it would be a double whammy.
Go ahead. Ride on. As our story opens again today, we find the young jock, Pearly White, speaking with the doctor about his throat problem.
All right, Junior, you come to the right man. With a voice like mine, I'm a natural throat doctor.
But, what? Doc, you got to understand that being a rock jock, it's important to me that I keep a very... there it goes again. Doc, there it goes
again. Wait a minute.
You see, every time I try to say survey throat...
Number seven this week,
something's been happening
to my voice lately.
I don't know. Can you help?
Doc. I hate to tell you something, kid, but you got a real problem with your throat.
But, Doctor, You
give me some advice. Get out of the business.
What have we here? What is wrong with the young rock jock's throat? You won't want to miss the final Thank the Lord concluding episode at 5:15 when you'll hear the young rock jock pleading to the doctor.
Doctor, my
entire career is at stake. I've got to do something. I had the same problem with Bobby Breen.
The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero and produced by Tondaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Washington. Until the next hour. Talk, talk.
Laugh tonight with Mac McGarry on the NBC Radio Network. WRC Washington, 4:30.
Mr. Fix-It.
That was funny.
Tell us about Mr. Fix-It.
Well, you were Mr. Fix-It, if I remember.
That's right, Willie.
I don't think I was Mr. Fix-It. And did he have a sponsor? Did he just every day have something that
Johnson,
he had to fix?
Used to do the commercials with Johnson and Swanson.
Oh, yeah, Johnson and Swanson, the Band-Aid business.
Yeah.
Or I think they had Band-Aids for dead birds. Because Swanson makes turkey pie, don't they? You know, if you want to, you know, put a Band-Aid on your...
WRC Radio, in cooperation with Johnson and Swanson, the world's greatest manufacturer of first-aid kits, have a visit with Mr. Fix-It, Radio's original do-it-yourself program. Today, as we join Mr. Fix-It, we find him out here in the backyard where he's rehearsing for the annual chorus, I think. Ahoy there, Clayton.
Ahoy there.
Willard Scott, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
We just learned that Mr. Fixit's first name was Clayton. And
well, we've been trying to keep it a secret.
We're blabbing it around. Mr. Fixit?
His middle name is Murgatroyd, as long as it's coming out here.
Welcome to the show again today.
Thank you. I have a very practical project.
Johnson and Swanson?
Yes.
Our sponsor.
They've been with me a long
time. Sit down. You have to stand up when I say the name of the sponsor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well.
Oh, what is today's...
Lead me. You're the straight man on
what? What is today's feature, Mr. Fixit?
Well, today we're doing something that's practical. This is not a luxury item. This is out of necessity.
I see. And
as a public service, I would like to remind the motorists of the Washington area, Maryland and Virginia, that it's not too long in the distant when you must have your new license tags on your car.
And you're finding a way to forge a license plate.
Oh, no, nothing as ridiculous as that. I'm just going to show you in a simple, easy lesson how easy it is to put on your license plate. There's no need to bother the friendly service station attendant at your friendly service station. I mean, when you can do it yourself.
I see that many people have a lot of troubles, of course, with bolts rusting in England. This is the little knick-knack nut bolt kit that you
have
here.
That's right, and this is we use these little wrenches here that have the proper size.
We take the old plate off the car first.
First of all, it's just two screws on each plate. I'll just start loosening this plate. It's a little stuck. Just there, give me a little room.
I'll move out of the way.
Hit my thumb.
Fender fell off there.
Yeah, but I hit my thumb this morning there.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, well,
you've only got one bolt to go.
Huh? Yeah, I only got one fender to go. All right, now let me see. If I can just, let's see, wait a minute. Get this one here. A little rusty.
You broke a headlight there, Mr. Fixit.
You know.
Getting the front plate off. Well, you got both plates off the front anyway.
Well, anybody like to buy an open roadster?
Would you like to go ahead and put the bolt back on the front?
There's no place to put it. The
radiator's still there.
Oh, well, let me try. Here, let me get the...
Hang it on a radiator, and we are running short on time.
Let's get it.
We've been visiting with do-it-yourself from Mr. Apparently, the radiator is no longer in front of the car. Johnson and Swanson has brought you this program. Mr. Fix is now walking over getting his daughter's bicycle over there.
Excuse me. You got a car token.
Be listening again next week when you'll hear Mr. Fix it say.
Why did he invent the car anyway?
And we used to play some great records like I Love Onions and Run Rabbit Run. Remember some of their...
Oh, yeah. And you know, one of my favorite bits, I don't know if we've ever had it on this or maybe he's got it, is the silent movies we showed on radio, which I thought was a riot. Because we played a piano, one of the old-time pianos, you know, with the, with the thumbtacks on the... ding-ding-ding-ding-ding. And then you'd hear the projector roll, you know, with the sound effects of a projector. And then the studio audience, which was ample. Every Friday we had 50, 60 people in the studio. And then, you know, something would happen, like you'd hear the cavalry, diddling, 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 and everybody go, oh, yay! And they'd applaud, and it was really funny.
We thought it was, anyway, at the time.
I used to love that.
It's about 13 and a half minutes in front of 6 o'clock here on the Walker Scott Show, the Joy Boy Show for Friday, for the last time over this station. And we hope that you will stay with us now. Are you ready? Are you off the phone? Are you got your undivided attention?
I'm ready.
Then it's time, ladies and gentlemen, for...
And now, the continuing and concluding episode as the worm turns. The story of Lahai... Today in the big city hospital,
and space again, man.
Brought to you by Stump No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray on your children to protect them from management and other evil things that might come along in the night.
And go, whoop. What are you, Mr. Announcer?
Oh, all week long in Big City Hospital, we've been in the office of kindly doctor and throat surgeon.
Surgeon,
the lovely Clayton Jackson Durante.
You've got to start off each day with a song.
We don't need
even
that.
Even when
MD, DDT, and I'll forget the rest of it. A top 40 jock, a young pearly white all-night man at the local rock station, called not too long ago in the middle of the night with a problem. Apparently, he had taken out the young receptionist a week ago, and something had developed. Well, apparently the young rock jock's throat was beginning to bother him, and as today's episode takes place, the young jock confesses to the doctor.
Hey, Doc, you gotta
understand that something strange has happened to me. I've been
working at this rock station now for about 6 years on the
all-night guy, and you see, I swing...
Wait a minute.
What do you think?
Doc, is there...
There's only two doctors in the country that know what's the matter with you.
What do you
think's wrong with me, Doc?
Me and Dr. Mylickson.
Dr. Mylickson?
Yeah, the famous throat man.
You think he could help?
I don't think... How old are you, kid?
26, Doc.
I'll tell you what's happened to you.
What do you think, Doc?
Your voice is changing.
Well, Doc, that's impossible. I'm 26 years old. Your voice changes when you're about 16.
When you start doing them rock record shows at age 15 or 16, yeah, you sort of lock your vocal cords in the open position.
You mean I got locked?
Locked vocal cords?
Yeah,
but now they're locked in the other position. Pretty soon you won't be able to talk that way no more. You only got one choice, and let me get you a job.
Doc, you're the most
wonderful guy I've ever worked
in my life.
Believe me, I'll see to it, Doc. Someday I can do the best I
can. Joe, I got another one up here. He can work the 12 to 8 shift for you. Yeah, he's terrific. Okay, right. Here, take this number, go down to this guy, ask for Joe, and he'll give you a job right away. The Greyhound bus station. You'll be calling buses for Greyhound. Try it.
Bus now leaving on gate 7. Hey, Doc! Thank you very much. Another top rock jock bites the dust but goes to better things. Well, what have we here? Hope for an old swinging jock. You... Uh-oh, it's all over. No second page. That means this is it, folks. The show is over. Well, thanks to Damon De Valero and to Denise. Thank you, Denise.
Thank you.
And to Tondaleo T. Thomas. This has been a Damon Del Tandel production and has come to you from Washington. This program was live. Who wrote that in there? So long, and love to you all from all of us here at The Worm. The Worm will return Monday on WWDC.
Well, we left WRC in 1972, and we have excerpts.
Under very mysterious
on this disc of our last program. And from there, we went to WWDC. We did have an afternoon show there for about 2 years, but...
They're a lot smarter than they were at RC. It only took them 2 years to discover.
They got ready to sell it. That end of the Joy Boys in 1974, and then Willard became...
You mean it's over?
Yeah.
You mean that was the last thing we were ever going to do?
Well, I'm working for you now, my Lord.
My Lord.
And,
who am I working for?
The same bunch, the wife and the kids.
Lissandra.
You went to New York after that. Well, you were a local weatherman here until about 81.
Right.
Then you went to New York.
Once I found out I knew absolutely nothing about anything at all, they sent me to the big... I was an expert at nothing. So, hey, he's New York material.
Yeah. I ended up at WMAL, and then I finally...
You did TV, too, for a while.
Yeah, That's thanks to you, in a way.
Me?
Because I remember when we were sitting around philosophizing about what am I going to do now that we had to break up the team. And you said, why don't you go into television? I said, I don't know how to do television. She said, what do you do? You sit there and talk to somebody because God knows when you start talking, nobody can shut you up.
Man, me.
So...
Oh, you're talking about me?
Yeah.
Oh,
you're talking to me at the time.
That's what people say. Your only handicap was me as a partner. You were doing well until you met. Well, you know who was good at that, too, with you was Charlie Stopak. I always like to give people credit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to mention, though, the somebody else who's passed on, who was a wonderful, wonderful supporter and loved our show so much and helped us, was Bill Grayson, who was our program director at WRC.
Yes.
They took him out and hung him about a week after our show went on the air.
He's the Grayson they talk about in Tom Dooley.
Remember that? Hang down your head, Bill Grayson. What was the question?
Well, you were just saying who
are some of the people that screwed us over? Let's get them on here. Give us another side to the tape, and we'll tell you all the people that shafted us during the 23 years.
Well, we got to give credit.
But we got even with them. They all died.
We got to give credit to our engineers, because I really do feel that a lot of those guys enjoyed working with us. Guys like we mentioned, Bobby Shenton and Art Semig and Art Page. And Will Hagee, God love him, and Mike Berry.
Mike Berry, sweet.
And just great. We had the greatest engineers available. And
George Brewington.
George Brewington.
He loved to do the show. He had more fun with that show. He actually woke up. It was Simic who woke up. Simic slept for 27 years. He was the Rip Van Winkle of NBC. In fact, the tape, we ran it on the show all the time, of Simic sleeping.
Snoring.
Didn't we use it in the 1812 Overture or
we
something?
We did something. Somebody went in the announcer's lounge one night, and Simic was on his lunch hour.
On his back.
And they put... They had a portable Nagra tape recorder, and they put a set of rabbit ears on Semmick's stomach, and they would go up and down.
Well, he looked like Lou Costello. He did. He had that same build, and they taped that and used it on. We used it on the show all the time. You know, ba 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 ba.
And some of the great stuff was that when he would exhale,
oh yeah,
even like, water was candle, bad.
Like
no flies on him.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, we hope that you all enjoy this CD, and this I hope will be the first of several that we'll offer from time to time. And we want to certainly thank Bob Bybee, who used to come down to visit us with his dad. Bob was about 15 years old.
He's only 12 now. He's
yeah.
back.
Anyway, I thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoy what you're going to hear.
We are the Joy Boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro. We are the Joy Boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro.
That's our program for this week, folks. Our producer, Richard the Lionhearted. Our director, Marco Polo. Scripts and special material by Queen Isabella.
Columbus, where are you?
And our lawyer, Clarence Darrell.
Well, we lost another one, boy.
Thanks to Bobby Shedden, Arthur Fay, the Mystery Man. Here's Charlie Steph.
This program is still being heard by our armed forces overseas, I guess.
We are the Joy Boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro. We are the Joy Boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro.
Guy Lombardo strikes back at Mac McGarry tonight on NBC. Mm-hmm.